This meeting is now being recorded.
So this brings to mind, I watched Apollo 13 over the weekend. At the beginning of the movie, remember, one of the main entries goes out, and Hanks turns to the rest of his crew members and says, I think that was our big glitch for the day. But I hope this phone call is our big glitch for the day, as I anticipate this, given the work that's gone into all of these items, I anticipate this meeting hopefully to be a productive one, and one that will remain well on schedule. So with that, I want to welcome everybody. We're now live. We've talked about this so many times. You all know the rules. If you're calling in, and we understand there's quite a few members calling in today, don't put us on hold, but obviously put us on mute so you can do more important work in the background or whatever it is you're doing. We appreciate your presence. And with that, we're going to start the meeting off by taking roll. Randy?
Jed Conklin.
I'm here.
Ms. Fleming?
Here.
Jed Barton?
Here.
Jed Blum?
Here.
Jed Buckley? Jed Cook?
Here.
Jed Fanning?
Here.
Jed Gabe?
Here.
Jed Jackson?
Here.
Jed Martinez?
Here.
Jed Nadler?
Here.
Judge McCabe? Judge Thompson?
Here.
Ms. Bartleson?
Here.
Ms. Carter?
Here.
Mr. Finke?
Here.
Mr. Harrigan?
Here.
Mr. Planet?
Here.
Mr. Roddy?
Here.
Mr. Taylor? Ms. Turner?
Here.
Ms. Yugun Kapitanko?
Here.
Mr. Yamasaki?
Here.
And advisory members, Mr. Wardlaw?
Here.
And Mr. Theodorovich?
Here. There you go. All right. I think the plane is leveled out, and we're on track again. Thank you all so much. I think I've already gone through all the rules to follow. And with that, I'm going to ask if there is any member, and assuming you all have reviewed the minutes of the last meeting, if there's anybody who is prepared to make a motion to approve the minutes from the June 4th telephonic meeting that we had.
Bartleson moves.
All right. So we'll show Thompson. Convert Bartleson's into a second. It's been moved and seconded that the minutes from the June 4th meeting be approved. Any opposition to that motion? Hearing no opposition, the minutes are approved from that meeting. Okay, and Mr. Taylor just joined us, so even more fun. We're now at public comment, and my understanding is that no public comment was there's nobody who's requested to make public comment, and no written public comment was received prior to the meeting. So we can proceed right to the first item, which is item one on your agenda. It's described as the workload formula funding at 100%. And this is, I'm going to turn it over right away, but this is consideration of FMSs, which for those of you that are listening and that are not familiar with our structure, that's the Funding Methodology Subcommittee to the Drug Budget Advisory Committee. And they put in significant work both themselves and through a subcommittee on this issue. And Leah, are you on the line to summarize this for us?
I am. Thank you. And thanks for letting me join remotely today so I can handle some other things here in the office. So there is a report that is in your materials. It starts on page 6. And as you mentioned, Judge, the item was discussed and vetted at Funding Methodology Subcommittee. So the report that I submitted on page 6 is relatively brief. And I left all of the details and materials in the attachment 1A, which starts on page 7. And essentially the issue at hand is that when the workload formula was refreshed and developed a couple of years ago, one of the items that wasn't fully addressed was how to handle the situation of courts whose funding need, according to the workload formula, exceeds 100%. And just because we've got a number of moving parts in the formula, the workload measurement, which is updated every year, it's based on filings data and the weights that are used to measure the amount of time staff spend on various activities and the amount of funding allocated. Those two inputs change annually, and as they change, the percentage of each court's workload formula similarly changes. And so the intent of this discussion and this group that came together over the first few months of 2019 was to more fully flesh out the scenario of when courts exceed 100% and there is, and specifically in years when there is no new money provided, how do we address that situation? And so a small group was put together. David Yamasaki led that group and got together to discuss and walk through various scenarios and ways to address this. And the upshot is the recommendation that's contained on page 6 of the materials. So after having many discussions and taking this item to FMS, the recommendation is that the workload formula policy be revised to say that courts whose funding need exceeds 105% be subject to a 2% reduction of funding without going below 104%. And that, secondly, keeping in mind that there is a BCP that's being written to address cost increase adjustments, the committee wanted to make very clear that any sort of adjustments or funding received as a result of that BCP be kept separately and would not count as part of this this percentage adjustment. So the idea was not to have any sort of cost increase adjustment undo any of the policy change that was made with the first part of the recommendation. If this item is approved by TCPAC, it would be forwarded to the council for review at its September meeting. And at this point, I'll take any questions on the item.
Great, and I think before, I don't need to defer any questions, but before that, I'm gonna turn to Rebecca and others who might have been part of the granular work on this. Just to walk through a little bit more of the detail, Rebecca.
So I was actually not on the subcommittee on this. I'm Judge Buck. I felt like the conversation was very productive at the FMS group. I will say, just to add to Leah's comments about this, was a piece that was not addressed. We actually placed this on the work plan for the funding methodology subcommittee. So it was a charge that we gave them to come up with a methodology on addressing this. And this is an example of how if you leave the room, you become a chair of a subcommittee. So David was actually made our chair because he stepped out for coffee or something. And so I would actually open up the floor to him if he'd like to make some comments about the work that your committee did. And I would say thank you to everybody on the committee.
Yes, thank you very much. And I would also say that this particular topic was a bit complicated for a variety of different reasons. And it was very fortunate that we had the participants that we did. Many of the participants were around when we originally formulated the new WAPA formula, which is now the workload formula. But we also wanted to refresh our memories by trying to preserve some that basically we were trying to accomplish with the original methodology. And one was that we wanted to continue to make progress in helping courts that are well below the statewide average. And we were mindful of that in the sense that if there's no new funding on a particular year, there would be some recognition to try to bring those courts on the bottom end of the scale some resources. And again, that's part of the original philosophy that we had to try to help everybody move forward. The other thing that we wanted to consider was the fact that it's very difficult from one year to the next to be facing a significant reduction. So what we wanted to do was limit the reduction to an amount of 1%, and that's part of the original formula, which we did not touch. But in those courts that were over 105% of the funding formula, we also wanted to make sure that we somewhat preserve the 1% cap, but also bring into consideration one very important variable. So one of the realities that we face is that if one year you're at 100% funding and you receive no new funding because costs go up, essentially below 100% funding, and that deficit can range in a pretty significant way. So that's why we dropped the cap at 105%. realizing even though you may be over 100, again, costs go up, and we did not want to imperil courts by not getting, by not having additional funding coming in, that courts would then be facing a pretty significant reduction. It's along the same lines that any court would experience in a flat funding year. So that was the basis for that. Again, the caveat is that it's applicable for years where there is no new funding. It doesn't fall into the two flat budget years. It's when there's no new funding where this particular formula would be considered going forward. And
2 years?
It was 2 years.
Yeah.
I misspoke.
Right. Yeah.
And we had discussions about it. The second year where there's flat money
right.
here, it would trigger the, thank you very much. We took a lot of twists and turns.
Okay. We'll about that when we council, because it's more clear than that.
Yeah.
Right, but that was the intent, as everybody gets it.
But as you said, that's all that does is emphasize what was decided long ago, because
right.
it was always the first year flat funding, if no new funding, everybody's frozen, and it's not, and only if the second year that something like this would kick in, which thankfully.
The second occurrence.
Second occurrence, right. Right.
So
right.
I think that's an important distinction of second occurrence, because it's not two consecutive years. You could have a year of no funding. Funding coming in for 2 years, no funding, and that triggers that second occurrence.
And that hasn't changed.
Right.
I mean,
right.
the change is so minuscule. We're spending a lot of time talking about what we decided years ago. Really, it's just the additional percentage for those over 105.
Right.
Cut over.
I do think it's important for everybody to understand, though, clearly what it is that we have in place now
yep.
and what we're contemplating as a change.
Right. Which is just a percentage.
Correct.
Yeah, that's it.
Yep. That's a good point, Cheryl.
Yeah, let's not get buried in the weeds of stuff we've already decided and the council's approved. It's really just if you're over 105, you go down 2 instead of 1, but not lower than 104. That's
right.
it.
Exactly. Yep.
Chad. So, Leah, this is Chad Binky. I have a question about recommendation number 2. I just want to make sure I understand. Stands the part about based upon their pro rata share of the workload formula. So if, for example, our BCP is accepted and some formula is put into place and, you know, let's say that formula results in an outcome that says, okay, trial courts, we're going to give you 3% this year as a cost increase or, you know, whatever they label it as. So I had always been assuming that just means, okay, they gave us 3%, everybody gets 3%. But does this mean, well, they give 3% to the trial courts as a whole, but then we run that 3% through the workload formula so that actually some people will get 3%, some people will get something else? I'm not sure I understand the meaning of pro rata share of the workload formula in a BCP type situation.
Sure, go ahead. No, I actually agree with that because I think the intent was if we are fortunate, I know, write it down, if they're fortunate enough to have the BCP for CPI, those are cost increases.
Right.
So I would tend to agree with you.
Well, I think mathematically the thought was if they give 3%, then we would, now you're going to force me to do the math. I don't know that we would, you're going to take the 3%, whatever the sum total is, and then allocate it out to all the courts. I don't know, I can't do the math fast enough, would it always sum up to equal 3% of every court's individual share? I guess it would.
That is asking,
yeah.
And I don't necessarily have to.
The thought was that because this needs to be agnostic to where courts are relative to their funding needs, so if you're 105, you get money regardless, the way to allocate it would say, well, what's your pro rata share of the state needs.
Because it seems to me that if the CPI is based on very restricted GL, right?
Yeah.
It's going to be salary and those things as well as contractual obligations. It might be your percentage of the total share of those costs, but it's not based on workload. That's
right.
The one thing we have to remember.
Yeah.
It's based on cost.
So we've actually drafted the BCP, and we've uncoupled
Yeah. The CPI stuff, you know, the escalator that we talked about at the last meeting from the workload related stuff. So, and we were very clear in the BCP that we would exclude certain GLs and certain categories of costs, such as capital expenses and, you know,
certain benefits,
you know, because benefits are covered in a different way, and other, you know, one time, like if you buy a case management system, you don't get credit for that because it's a one time thing. So I think I also have a little trouble with the recommendation language in number two, because it does seem to create a linkage between the cost increase adjustment and the workload formula, and we were very clear that we were decoupling those two things in the BCP.
Okay, so Chad had his hand up, and then if there's any thoughts or perhaps, and I think we all understand the concern on item number two about perhaps how to clarify it, Chad and then Rebecca.
Well, I think I may have anticipated your question, Ms. Conklin, because when the recommendation went to FMS, the language was different, and it just said allocate any funding received for cost increase adjustments to trial courts separately from the workload formula allocation.
Separately
means what? And then staff.
So we need guidance on how, when we get a pot of money, how we divide it up.
Rebecca.
My question was going to be for Kim, and you're going to be much more, you're going to be able to remember the language much better than I am, but is there phrasing in the BCP that we could actually kind of borrow from for that to decouple?
Yes, there is.
And I'm just not remembering.
Yeah, and I didn't bring it with me, unfortunately, but Lucy has the BCP. We did spend a lot of time laying out the argument and trying to describe how that mechanism
would
work.
But
there was
intended
to be of how to calculate the value.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it goes into the allocation.
It doesn't go into the allocation to the courts. It goes into how we would determine that cost increase percentage increase that would be applied to the GL. But we didn't talk in the BCP about how that would trickle down to the various courts.
Sure.
Can I go back to what we're trying to do here? Why don't we use the language that was in the CF recommendation here? We have time, since we're not going to get the BCP, CPI until next fiscal year, to come up with how that's going to look and come back. You know, give it to one of the work groups to do that, because what we're asked to do is to really look at those over 100%. We all agree that it's not going to include the costing. So use general language there. Let's not try to get in the weeds and figure out the allocation today. Let's take
okay.
some time.
So to clarify that on item two, is the thought, and I'm just throwing this out there from based on what I've heard, that it would now read, allocate any funding received for cost increase adjustments to trial courts separately from their pro rata share of the workload formula?
No,
is that accurate?
Read the language we used before, because that it says it, but it doesn't tell us how to allocate.
Right. It says allocate any funding received for cost increase adjustments to trial courts separately from the workload formula
yep.
allocated.
Right.
That's
about
it. So, Judge, that might have been an error on my part. Yeah, it should have repeated the recommendation that was on page 9. So can we accept an amendment that the recommendation should be
there you go.
It appears on page 9.
Allocate any funding received for cost increase adjustments to trial courts separately from the workload formula allocation.
Yes.
A methodology for allocating funds will be determined at a later date, so we're clear that it's still outstanding.
I think we are clear. I'm not sure we need to put it in the recommendation.
I have a motion. I move that we approve item, the recommendation 1 on page 6 and recommendation 2 on page 9. And if it makes judicial counsel staff happy to say, to be, you know, allocation formula to be determined, I don't care about that.
To revert back to staff. Or
yeah, 1 on 6 and 2 on 9.
So I would second that, but I would suggest that perhaps and make the allocation part of this motion. Maybe when we get to the work plan, we add it to the work plan as a particular addressing the cost of living adjustments if they should come forward.
Judge Cole?
So I think I heard the staff is concerned that one isn't sufficiently clear that it's the second occurrence of
approve a change to the workload formula policy concerning allocations in subs. It's technically not. It is.
Secondary.
It's not if we say the second year, that implies it's year one, year two. It is in this
second occurrence.
Yes. Thank you.
Of no new money. Yep.
Second occurrence of no new money.
Right.
Just they want the language in there. That's
yep, I like that.
I appreciate
thank
that.
You. Yep.
Is that commencing any particular year? Or is that already
in place? It's
already in place. Yeah.
That's a friendly amendment to your motion, Jerry.
And I accept it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And
so,
Rebecca also have a friendly amendment to Sherry's
my question. Amendment was to not include the just the allocation method, but rather we address that in the work plan conversation we're having.
And also to understand, we have not had a year yet with no new funding since this policy.
That's
I wanted to say it for the record so that folks understand that.
That's
right.
Well, but Tanya's point should not be ignored. It hasn't occurred yet. So in order for this to happen, it would have to occur the first time. But that wouldn't cause it to take into place until it occurs the second time, which could, but hope for the best, plan for the worst. Okay.
So I'll second the motion and all the friendly amendments that came thereafter.
Perfect. I think we've had motions and seconds and is, so now it's been moved and seconded. That item number one on page four with the change of concerning allocations, reallocation, second occurrence of no new money. And then turning to page nine, the second part is number two, allocate any funding received for cost increase adjustments to chart parts separately from the workload formula allocation.
And an allocation methodology will be discussed.
No, that's going to be,
we're
taking that out.
That's all.
Right, and that's going to, we're going to talk about it in a few minutes.
Add
before.
It.
All right.
I'm with it.
Second. Okay. Any further discussion on the motion on item one?
The question.
Okay.
I'm speaking. No new money. Does that mean if we get $10 in some category, this doesn't apply?
New money is discretionary.
Yeah, it was defined in the previous policy that if there's non-discretionary and discretionary. If non-discretionary, it doesn't count. If it's discretionary funding coming in, that would, and if it's $10, it's $10.
No,
I don't think it would be.
For a specific purpose, it is not considered new funding for this.
Which again, I appreciate that clarification, makes it even more, not rare, but if it's
for the current issue, yeah.
Right, if it's allocated funding, we'd get a lot of extra money, and this still wouldn't kick in. So,
Chancellor, we'll send you the council report that approved this original.
It's a sheet. We got the ins and outs, what I call the hokey pokey sheet. So, you know, because you put it in, you
what?
Take it out. It's the hokey pokey sheet. You know, you put it in, you take it out.
All right,
so now that we have a new theme song for this committee, which is the Hokey Pokey, hearing no further discussion, is there any member in the room or on the phone that is opposed to the motion pending concerning item one? Hearing no opposition, I'm going to deem it's passed unanimously on item one, and we now turn to, we're going to actually go out of order. Because of staffing issues, and so what we're going to do is go to an informational item that involves, at this point, Kristen. And Kristen, are you on the phone? So we're going to go to info item number two, the self-help annual update. There's no action required on this. It's page 24 of your materials, and Kristen Greenaway. Kristen, have you joined us? Uh-oh.
All right. So, Judge, I can give the item for you. She wasn't positive she was going to be able to get out of her other session.
Great. That's Leah again. Thank you.
Yeah. So let me go ahead and do that. So turning to the materials, this is just an informational item. This is not an action required item. But as part of the relook at various methodologies that are overseen by this committee, one of the items that we have recently revised is the self-help funding methodology or allocation methodology. And if members would recall the last time we did this, the population data that's used for self-help had not been updated for over a decade, and so the allocations of self-help money were made on the basis of very outdated population data. So the committee had adopted a recommendation, which was later approved by the Judicial Council, to use more updated population data and also to publish the population data on an annual basis so that courts would be well aware of and could track potential changes in their self-help allocation as it related to population. And so this is responsive to that request that we provide the courts the annual population updates based, again, on a three-year average. So typical, or as with other parts of our methodologies, we use a three-year rolling average to smooth out any fluctuations year to year. And so that data is contained in a table that starts on page 25 of your materials. So we show, moving from left to right, the previous population data that, for those who are looking on the screen, is shaded in kind of that light salmon color, and then the updated population data, the tables or charts, or the column is in the center, shaded in light green, and then the percentage changes are shown on the far right. So again, this is not an action item, this is informational only, and it's submitted here for the committee's review.
I just want to mention that any draft watermark on the materials should not be there. All these reports are in final formatted.
Yes.
Okay, so it's an informational and update item. Leah, thank you very much for stepping up for Kristen. Any questions of Leah about this as we progress on this? Anything at all? Okay. Apparently not. I'm obviously not going to call for a motion, but this is just an information item. So, Leah, thank you so much for presenting on that annual update concerning population.
Thanks, Judge.
Yeah. Thank you. So now we're getting back to the agenda as published, and that is item number two, and that is the Funding Methodology Subcommittee work plan. And this is an action item concerning their work plan update, and I'm going to turn to Lucy for that.
So each year, the Funding Methodology Subcommittee brings their work plan to stick back for approval for the upcoming year. This is not an item that would go to the council. The stick back is the approving authority for this. What I did include this time, just to give kudos to the FMS, was a list of all the achievements all the work plan items they actually executed and finalized in the 2017-18 and 18-19 period. You know, we had many parking lot items that came from the original WACWAM working group, and I think the FMS did an amazing job in getting a lot of those issues resolved as identified in the attachment to C. Is what the FMS is recommending for the work plans for 19-20 and 2021. There was a discussion at the FMS about any possible additional items, and they agreed to open it up to the tick bank to see if there's anything missing from the work plan. Already we have one addition, which is going to be how to allocate the CPI. But the FMS wanted to ask the full membership whether there's any items they think may be missing or things we need to achieve in 19-20 or 21. That is missing from work plan. We still have the cluster 2 issue to resolve. That will be resolved pending the OE&E review. It's almost done, right, Sherry, I think?
Yes.
Yes. We have an adjustment request submitted by El Dorado, which is looking at incorporating criteria for multiple locations into the formula.
Lucy, can I interrupt you in that there are some arcs that we had forwarded on to WAC? We expecting those to come back to FMS?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, so there are some adjustment requests for the workload formula that really were under the purview of the Workload Assessment Advisory Committee because they're more related to RAS than the workload formula. So those were all up for WAC for consideration, and I would consider feedback work done on that. We also are working on a methodology for the court interpreter program. Although we got additional funding for that program, we're still in a position where it could end up in a shortfall with costs increasing, no additional funding provided. So we want to work now to get a shortfall methodology in place before we actually have to allocate the shortfall. Sometimes easier to come up with methodology when you're not faced with the shortfall itself. And then the last thing for 1920 is to develop methodology for allocation so this came up when we were allocating the funding for the new judgeship. And even though we had directions from the council about 50% will go to below the statewide average, 50% to everybody, the actual methodology for doing that wasn't actually specified. So we want to get that in writing so it's not a staff question each year how to allocate. So they're the primary items. The big item is the 2021 item, which is evaluating all the services the council provides to determine whether courts are using those services and not paying for them versus other courts that are not using them and providing them in-house with their own funds. That's that.
All right. Anybody want to be a member of FMS in the room? I'm sorry, Brandy.
As it relates to the CPI and adding that to the work plan, would that go under 2021?
1920. Okay. If the VP is successful, we would receive funding in 2025.
So let's get a little specific on that language so staff has it.
And I think we even have a subcommittee that can take that.
Are you going to give it to David?
What?
Just
a moment. Who the hell are you talking? I think the same group would be happy. It's ordered. Yeah. Thank you very much.
So, Lucy, do you have a preferred way to state that so that you feel like it encompasses the CPI?
Yeah, what you need?
I
think
I
so.
We want to have the CPI allocation,
yes.
Should it be granted to us?
So this is, though I know everybody who followed it, we had our discussion a few minutes ago about item one, and the discussion was to defer to the till we get to this item about the discussion of CPI, which is what we're taking up right now. And I think we just did.
Yeah.
Okay.
David, who's a part of that working group?
Terry, Mike. All right, which one are you?
Roddy.
Oh, it's Roddy. I don't think I'm that. It's me. Sonia.
Great. Okay.
Thank you.
This is an action item. Any other discussion? And if not, I would invite somebody to. And that motion is to adopt the recommendation, adopt the proposed work plan?
Yes.
Planet seconded by Planet. Moved and seconded to adopt the work plan as set forth on pages 10 and 11. I'm sorry, it's actually 10 through 13 of your materials. With the addition that we just talked about concerning CPI, now it's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion on the motion? Hearing and seeing none, is there any member on the phone or in person who's opposed to the pending motion concerning methodology work plan as stated in the materials? Hearing no opposition, I'm going to deem that that item passes unanimously. So we're now moving along to item three on the work plan, which is a discussion of the preliminary one-time reduction for fund balances above what is currently the 1% cap, but that obviously will play out differently. And Michelle Allen from Budget Services is here. Michelle?
Good morning. So each year, courts are required to submit a preliminary computation of their ending fund balance that is subject to the 1% cap. Attachment A reflects this preliminary computation reported by courts. Courts may only carry over unexpended funds not to exceed 1% of the court's operating budget from the prior fiscal year, pursuant to Government Code Section 68502.5. Typically, the July preliminary information is presented to the Judicial Council at its business meeting in July. However, due to timing issues with the date of the Council's July meeting and closing of prior year by trial court, preliminary reductions could not be presented. Therefore, they will be presented to the Judicial Council at its business meeting in September. Based on the preliminary year-end information received from the court, staff recommends the trial court budget advisory committee approve the 2018-19 preliminary one-time allocation reduction of $7,376,205 to 15 courts that are projecting their ending fund balance to exceed the 1% cap for consideration by the Judicial Council at its business meeting final 1% reduction will be presented before the Judicial Council at a meeting before February. We're happy to answer any questions.
Go ahead, Kim.
So for courts that are requesting funds held on behalf, on their behalf, presumably those will work their way through the process before the September council meeting. Is that right? So that those recommendations will be in final form by then. Is that right?
They are scheduled to be presented to the council at the September meeting. They're not included in this report because they have not yet been approved.
Okay.
So they're doing that this afternoon.
Right, okay.
The fiscal planning subcommittee is meeting right after this committee meet to discuss numerous requests from courts to continue to, I know this is again getting granular, but everybody knows how this, in this room knows how this works. You've got your 1% fund. If it's greater than 1%, to oversimplify, it goes back unless at that point it's already been pre-committed, so to speak, or it's being used for ongoing projects. And that's what FPS deals with. And FPS says, okay, to those courts, the fiscal planning subcommittee says to those courts, we approve, we consider, and either approve or don't approve your request that the 1% funds that stay in the trial court trust fund, so they're not in those courts' bank accounts, they're in the trial court trust fund, continue to remain there rather than reverting back, so those courts continue to use them for obligated purposes,
right?
Which is exactly the way it was designed.
Right.
So that's, Kim, I'm glad you brought that up. That's a separate 1% discussion. Now, this is for, as noted, 18-19. We all know now it's been approved as 3%. So from here on out, we would only be addressing those courts that have more than a 3% holdback, which would roll over to FPS as well, and FPS would only be discussing those funds that need to be held for 3%. And candidly, the hope is, with that difference, that these numbers essentially evaporate.
Right. But presumably, most of the 15 courts that have a figure in the red in column J have a fund held on behalf of request that's going to be heard this afternoon by the FPS group, right?
Maybe not all of them. Only those that collect.
And was this also done before 13-month was closed out? So there might be some adjustments from that?
Oh, yeah. So we'll do the final. So there could be adjustments on requests that are
right, being... Right. So that's a I think my point is just not requests that we're going to receive in that room, but...
There could be more in the fall.
Okay, we're like statutorily obligated to have done this, so we have to do this preliminarily, and then the law says come January we make final adjustments. So this is by law, we have to make this with the best information we have, knowing that we will have true ups and final numbers that end up happening at a later council meeting.
Right. And again, I'm just saying this for the sake of those who are listening and who may not have the same. This is no surprise to these courts. This is good court. This is good financial management, and these courts know these numbers are out there, and if the end of the year comes around, they're just following the rules they need to follow to either ask for these funds to be approved to be continued to be held or not. So this, I want to avoid if there's any perception out there that these courts are having money, somebody's knocking their door saying, give us back money that you don't know about. That's not the case.
Right.
This is good fiscal management for the courts and for the branch. Blah, blah. So that's put forth in pages 14, 15, 16, 17, and 18 of your materials. Further discussion, and if not further discussion, I'd invite a motion. The recommendation specifically is on page 15, approve the 18-19 preliminary one-time allocation reduction of $7.3 million and change to 15 courts that are projecting the portion of their ending fund balance that is subject to the 1% balance cap, and as the motion continues.
Yamasaki seconds.
Yamasaki moves. Judge Martian is seconds. Seconded the recommendation at page 15 of your materials be adopted as stated. No amendments, no friendly amendments, just as stated. Any further discussion? Hearing none, any opposition in the room or on the phone to the motion that's been moved and seconded concerning the recommendation of page 15? Hearing no opposition, the recommendation is approved. Okay, well, we continue to move well ahead of schedule, but unless anybody's asking for a break, let's just keep going. Great. I get a lot of nods and see a lot of nods. So that gets us to item number 4, allocation of cannabis convictions, resentencing funding. This is an action item. It starts on page 19 of your material. It's on pages 19 through 21.
with the recommendation itself being set forth at page 20. And Michelle, you're up again. Thank you.
Good morning again. The 2019 Budget Act includes one-time funding of $13.901 million in 2019-20 and $2.929 million in 2020-21 to support the increased workload for the trial court as a result of the enactment of AB 1793, which requires sentence modification of past cannabis conviction cases pursuant to the Control, Regulate, and Tax Adult Use Marijuana Act. Provisional language in the 2019 Budget Act requires that any unexpended funds revert to the general fund and therefore will not be able to be carried forward into 2020-21 by the Judicial Council. The Control, Regulate, and Tax Adult Use of Marijuana Act, or AUMA, was enacted by voters at the November 8, 2016 statewide general election. This law regulates the cultivation, distribution, and use of cannabis for non-medical purposes by individuals 21 years of age and older. Current law authorizes a person to petition for the recall or dismissal of a sentence, dismissal and sealing of a conviction, or redesignation of a conviction of an offense for which a less offense or no offense would be imposed under AUMA. The Department of Justice is required to review all records in the State Summary Criminal History Database and identify past convictions that are potentially eligible for recall or dismissal, dismissal and sealing, or redesignation. The Department of Justice is also required to notify the prosecution of all convictions that are eligible, and the prosecution is allowed until January 1st, 2020. To review all cases and determine whether to challenge the recall or dismissal, dismissal and sealing, or redesignation of the case based on the person either not meeting the criteria for resentencing or the person presents an unreasonable risk to public safety. The prosecution is required to inform the court by July 1st, 2020, if they are not challenging a particular recall, dismissal, or redesignation. And if the prosecution does not challenge by July 1st, 2020, the court is required to reduce or dismiss the conviction. The Funding Methodology Subcommittee recommends the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee approve a proportional allocation methodology for the $13.9 million in 2019-20 and the $2.9 million in 2020-21 based on the percentage of estimated eligible cases by county, and an initial distribution of 50% of funding with a 2019 mid-year reassessment of need for consideration by the Judicial Council at its business meeting on September 23rd, 24th, 2019. Attachment A of the material displays the allocation by court based on the recommendation. Program staff are in attendance via the conference call to answer questions including funding allocations and data collected. As well, we have staff of the Judicial Council Information Technology Program here to provide a brief statement regarding support to trial courts in implementing AB 1793. Following, we are happy to answer questions.
Let's go to IT. Are they in the room? Great. Okay. So, and if you could keep your, we just want to make sure everybody on the phone can hear you, and I'm not sure you're close to us. So could you come, we just put you over here. Thanks. Sorry to put you up on the spotlight.
Sorry. Thank you.
You bet. Welcome. And could you introduce yourself?
Absolutely. I'm Suzanne Schlater. I'm an information system supervisor in the technology department in the criminal justice unit. I am here on behalf of Heather Pettit, our CIO, who is currently at the California Information Technology Managers Forum, speaking on this very subject. She wanted to make sure you got the information as well, and that you also received JCIT's offer of assistance and help with implementing AB 1793. So the Judicial Council, on behalf of all statewide trial courts, has entered into multiple master service agreements with case management system vendors. The three MSA vendors are Journal Technologies, Justice Systems Incorporated, and Tyler Technologies. These three vendors are live in 41 courts, or soon to be live in 41 of the 58 trial courts. In addition, 10 more courts just had a successful CMS BCP for 19 and 20 and may choose to enter into agreements with those three vendors. That being said, we have a similar project, and we are currently working on participating addendum with those MSA vendors so that with these PAs in place, JCIT can directly order work from the vendors on a statewide level. We can negotiate statewide pricing and the standards that we need for additional projects, you know, like the data mapping standards and things like that. We have ideas of possible and potential integration work that will address the requirements of AB 1793, moving from a manual to an automated process. We can assist the court, work with the vendors and Code for America to deploy efficient, timely, and reusable solutions to the trial court. We would be more than happy to discuss that with any courts that may be interested. And again, this is an offer of assistance to the court. We're aware of the work that's been done so far.
So I have a question. So Heather's giving this report to the CIO.
Yes.
Is that right? This is really a conversation for the CEO. The CIOs work for the CEOs, and this kind of a policy decision is not one made by the CIO. So I would suggest that if we have this kind of a dialogue in terms of statewide health, which I think is brilliant, by the way, you might add to the CX agenda.
And I had a conversation with Heather about what we were doing here as a preview, that she should bring it up at the CIO.
But I would suggest that if we're speaking, you talk to the CEOs before you talk to the CIOs, because even if they come back charged, they don't understand the broad spectrum of the operational components because they support technology, supports operations. So I think that's really important that we, you know, remember that because, for example, it won't work in LA because of the way we know the VA is going to be managing these cases. A statewide approach won't work, but she wouldn't know that. And Snorri, who's brilliant, won't know that either. So it's just kind of an approach that I would suggest.
That was my point with Heather, was you need to make sure you talk to the CEOs.
Yeah.
And there's an opportunity at the statewide
to have that
conversation.
Yeah, I think those things, and we have a CS meeting coming up, and it'd be great if you can do it.
August. At the statewide meeting.
Yep.
Is that in August?
Because it's a great idea. I'm not complaining about the idea. I'm talking about the politics of understanding how this all works. And when you have statewide initiatives, they should always go, if it's judicial, to the PJs first, and if it's, you know, on the operational side, to the CEOs.
Suzanne, thank you very much. And again, thank Heather for us. But Kim, did you have a question?
So moving on to operational concerns. So
I appreciate that. Before I just want to relieve you from your seat. Any questions about that?
Okay.
Any questions for Suzanne? And again, Suzanne, thank you so much. And please let Heather know we say thank you as well. As Ms. Carter said, brilliant. So with that, back to Kim.
Actually, I do have one more technology thing. So there are a few courts, you know, 17 of 58 that are not on one of the three systems where you have master agreements. And so, you know, I'm in a cluster of five courts that are on one solution, which is not terribly robust and isn't terribly, you know, easy to work with. The technology is not very, modern. So I'm assuming for those courts, they're sort of on their own to figure it out with those vendors.
Okay.
Yes.
Is it like Superion or one of those things, one solution, whatever?
Yes. One solution was bought by Central Square now, so Superion's even out.
So just really briefly, we have a similar project for the Department of Justice moved to NEAM compliant web services, and that's what we're planning to do this. And we're also planning to address the courts that are not on one of these vendors by going to RFP or RFO or whatever that thing is that we do to address your data exchange and to translate your current message into what's going to be. So we wrote that into our program.
Because really all they're talking about is identifying them. We all know that most of the files have already been destroyed. There is no record of all. It's going to be really hard to re-sentence things with no data around it. I mean, this is a
difficult, which is the really operational part.
That's right, and how you're actually going to get it, and if they actually, you know, oppose any of them, or which ones they're going to oppose. It's a much bigger deal than just finding them.
Yeah, and that was kind of moving, you segued nicely to my next thing, Sherry, which is that there are a bunch of courts that have been, getting rid of their misdemeanor marijuana conviction, you know, where it's a single charge, it's only marijuana, it's a misdemeanor. The law provides that we're supposed to make those things completely disappear, get rid of the paper file, get rid of the electronic record. So if you are up to date, if you're in a court that has actually been in compliance with that, Mendocino is one, I guess LA is another, lots of us have done that, but many courts probably have not tackled that yet. So I think those courts will have an easier time actually doing this project than for those of us that have nothing. We no longer have any records.
There is nothing to resentence on.
There's nothing to resentence on. They have to bring us a rap sheet. We'd have to create some kind of a ghost file. I don't know. We haven't really thought it all the way through. But I think that the considerations for how to distribute the funding by population is one thing, but I'm wondering if there was any consideration of
filing. Some population.
I'm sorry, not population, by eligible, you know, eligible convictions, I think is what this says.
Yeah.
So was there any consideration for the courts to still have a file versus the courts, or still have a record, not a file?
I think it goes beyond that. I think that's a good, that's a valid concern. I think there's other ones. I'm going to turn it over to Rebecca for some of that, because I think that I don't, obviously we don't control, this has already been approved in these funds. The question is how to allocate them and when to allocate them.
Right, and I think Kim's issues are specific to operational. So some of the conversation in FMS was dealing with the management of the money and the timing based on the 1%, now 3% calculation. But I think if you want to finish your thought, I think that is a valid issue.
And I think we don't know what we don't know yet. That's
right.
The problem. So we don't know if it takes, if you still have the record in your case management system and you still have the file, we don't know how many minutes will take to process the garden variety. Much easier. If you no longer have a case file, you no longer have an electronic record, and you're relying either on the defendant himself to bring in his rap sheet, or the DA, or you know, some other justice partner to get involved in this, it's going to be a much more laborious process to actually, you know, fulfill the mandate of the law.
And again, you know, aside from this budget stuff, we have been working with some pilot courts and Code from America. I've seen the data dump. If we can help you in any way, and we do have thoughts and possibilities and things even to address those manual files that may work for different courts, so we'd love to offer our assistance.
Okay, great. But going back to Kim's point, I don't think that I would not support a mechanism other than workload, because I agree it's more work, and there'll be more work for me, because I fall in that category. I don't think that we can sit and try to guess. And so I think the easiest way is to divide the money by what we have as objective criteria, because it's too hard to do it any other way.
David, and then Rebecca.
And one of the other things I wanted to add, the concern that we had was with this 1% cap. We didn't want to get all the money all at once, as we were trying to figure
some
out.
Some of us did.
So,
I did.
But the things have changed, because we met, I think it's June 17th, and a week later, so we didn't know those elements, but also this is kind of a new area. We didn't know what the volume of work was. We needed to start from somewhere. I think it's, you know, ultimately going to be fairly distributed, but using this particular formula. But again, it's 50% now with a true up later.
Rebecca and then Mike.
So, one of the concerns, so the carry, having the no control over the local VA and whether they get to it now or in May of 2020, you know, right before their deadline, is part of what was driving the concern around the carryover, potential carryover. Now we know the language doesn't allow for that, and that the money has to be distributed to the local court. One of the concerns that I have that I brought up to BLOTCO yesterday was that because we don't know what it's going to take, if we take a methodology like this and we say, okay, 50% is going to go now, and maybe you don't even establish your process, and you're evaluated in December, and then you get an onslaught maybe in March in LA where you all of a sudden
triple or quadruple your cost because now you really do, things are moving, you've worked it out with your DA, whatever it is, it's not necessarily going to be appropriately distributed based on workload. And so I asked Lotko to talk a little bit about, number one, the carryover rules around this money, because it's also not restricted. It will apply to the 3%. And then perhaps we can talk about whether or not a mid-year evaluation is still appropriate or whether we need to have the money up front so that we can deal with what we've got to deal with. So, Lotko, you want to mention?
The budget requires that any unexpended funds are reverting to the general fund. And so from our perspective, if we allocate, if this $13.9 million is all allocated to you, then it, from our perspective, it is expended and therefore not subject to reversion because it's now been expended from the state and received at your local court. If we were to hold back any and not have any, some portion not distributed, that would be then subject to reversion back to the general fund. So the issue is, once you get it, then you're the one that have the ability to manage it through this year and within your fund balance and carrying it over into the next year. And especially with the expansion of the 3%, that gives you more room to manage that. But
right.
There is
so
no way for
free. But once you get it, it's part of your 3%.
It's just part of your revenue and your allocation and how you manage that as you get to the end of the
year. So Mike and then Kim?
I think I'm done.
So Mike Ronnie, Judge Fannin, and oh, I'm sorry, Kim's done. So Mike, and then John.
I think it might be helpful to remember where this all started, which in the first iteration had us, the courts, identifying these cases. And for a lot of the reasons cited here, in terms of records and age and so forth, we knew that that was an impossible task. So as problematic as the DOJ data might be, it's all we've got to go on. And I don't know of a better way to get there from here, except it took a big burden off of us because in the first instance, it would have all fallen on us to identify and process and handle these cases. So I just, it's got to be workload based, however we get to that. But I'm not sure at the end of the day, we've got the kind of accuracy and depth of information we'd all like to have. And many of us are going to face this issue with these oldest convictions of the records being gone or incomplete or those kinds of things. We're all going to struggle through this one. I just don't know if there's a better way, and that's why we ended up with the recommendation we ended up with.
Can I just add, if I may, just about the – there is one other option in terms of carryover, which is it's called a reappropriation, which we approach the administration to and then ultimate legislature to reprogram the timing of the dollars. But I don't know if we'll have the data to necessarily do that in time for the budget process. So that while there is a mechanism, it's not necessarily easy. We'd have to be able to tell you court by court what share that we would want to hold back. And I don't know if that's when you get something in March, that would miss the timeline for us to be able to do that. So I want to tell you about the tech tools, and that's why we say that it really is a local fund management issue at the local court level that you have to deal with this.
I think we need to talk about Judge Fannin.
I just have a question. Will courts be required to account for the funds that they spend the money on these convictions,
no requirement of reporting within our proposal or the approval?
You tailed off there, or can we use it?
Well, this is just going to the general fund to be used however the court decides their funding.
And that's what I wanted to chime in on is should there be a subsequent audit, I would have an expectation that there would be a trail relative to this money. So a perceptionist says, well, you can use it for your 3% cap in future points. I'd be very cautious of that approach. Yes, it goes into your bucket of general fund to be expended, but there is clearly an expectation by the legislature in their appropriation that these funds are used for this purpose.
And they've been known to look
best. The 3% meaning that if the workload doesn't align with the allocation, that you carry it in your 3% so that it can be then expended in the year in which the workload is materialized. Not that it is.
But I think what he's saying is that we need to maintain a record.
Sure, sure, sure. No, I'm not saying that.
To
I'm saying one
record
that is
those cases
the
that fall
that's
under
correct.
That.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any dollar on spend would revert.
Right.
No,
yeah. I'm not hearing that you're saying dollar for dollar you've got to correlate that, but we should be keeping a list of all of those cases that come under this particular legislation that we applied money to in order to do that. Because, but clearly it's probably not enough money.
money to actually do the action, right?
So Zlatko, though, also, there's some kind of a reallocation in the mid-year that you're proposing. So you would need some kind of information to base that on.
Yeah, correct? I thought it was based on the updated DOJ data. Is that not correct?
So I'm just clarifying that for the group.
Oh. So can I just ask a couple points of clarification just so I understand it? As I understand the budget, the language, it's very clear. In 2019-2020, it's $13.9 million. In 2020-2021, it's $2.9 million. So that's where we start. The money then is dependent upon the work being done. So Mike, and I saw Kim's hand up, but Mike, that's what I think we need to work through about the 50% allocation is, and I'm not being critical, but as I understand the way it works is, either one, a defendant can file for this on their own. But the Department of Justice is obligated to say, these are all the cases that are out there that are applicable. And then the DA's office is obligated by July 1 to say, we have, Sherry, you're shaking your head, no.
Yes, I think you're right, but I think in one court, it's really going to be whether or not the DA challenges them.
Right. So that, but my concern is the timing of the work.
Yeah.
And the 50% allocation. So if you've got somebody who decides, let's just wait until the last minute, then those courts that have got their 50% allocation and don't have the cases to support that, but the next day, it's split.
Yeah. So
21. So full another year later.
So
the workflow could hit in
2021. So the first, I don't want to use the word audit, but the first data point is July 2021.
No.
Okay. Well, the DA's obligation, though, to notice it by. But they may wait until 2021.
Sherry, go ahead.
So, you know, I was one who did not. I voted to support the 50% with the true up because that's the spirit of the group. But for me, most of the work's going to be now because we're already in negotiations on how to get this done. So I think it's going to be really hard to find a solution that works for every single court because we're all going to be in different places. I think there will be many counties where the DA is just going to let it go and not do anything. You know, so I don't really know what we're being asked to do. If we're being asked to reconsider the 50% and the true up, I'm good with getting all the money right now because we're in the middle of trying to figure out what programming and other changes. There was concern at the time. We were told that you could carry it over in the Judicial Council Fund. Now we find out you can't. It changes the situation. So if we're looking at a different methodology, you know, I'm good with it. I think with John's point about tracking where you're going to spend the money is wise, but to throw it in your 3% is smart because there will be cases next year. And you can actually put that on your spreadsheet that if your DA hasn't done anything and it's going to be work next year, that would be a legitimate use to put in your 3%.
Mike Roddy, the funding does not line up with the work.
Right.
Well, given, in some counties, that's my point.
The DA's not going to, most DA's aren't going to get to this until close to July of 2020.
We've already started it.
And ours has no plan to do that. So, you know, it's not going to line up that way. I guess the best that we can work with is the idea that the money given to the courts can be, in fact, carried over within the 3% so that it aligns from an audit perspective with the work that will necessarily be done, I know in our case, into the 2021 fiscal year.
David?
Yeah, so I think I was the one that suggested the 50% reduction, thinking that we don't want to have too much money in our reserves if we're going to be subject to the 1% limit. Remember, it's June 17th where we met. Budget wasn't passed until later. And in light of the uncertainty that we have right now and the opportunity for us to hang on to the money and not lose it, I think I would support Sherry's proposal to distribute the 100% of the funding right now, giving courts an opportunity to do whatever it takes for those courts that are getting heavily worked now, and then realizing in the second year there's a couple million dollars there, and at the end of at the appropriate time, if courts need to have a little bigger chunk or more, those monies will be there for
Mike Planet. Thanks, David.
So I have another take on it. In a scenario where the DAs don't do anything, including up to July of 2020, that means our work doesn't begin. Our requirement to take some affirmative action is in the 2021 year. I'm basically reserved. I've got a part of my 3% that's reserved for something I'm not going to do for 2 years. Frankly, I'd rather have the space in my 3% for the more current money than something that I'm not going to deal with two fiscal years down the road. So, and I anticipate that's going to be, except for LA apparently, but with all the other partners that RDA has told us about and I hear about others, I really don't anticipate, I anticipate it coming down to our having to get the motions before the judges sometime after July of 2020.
Can I just ask for clarification? What was the thought if we stay with the 50%? So now it comes to the end of June. What happened? So I have Mike's concern as well. You're in a court where no work, and I'm just exaggerating, no work's been done yet. You've already got 50% of your money, but you can't, from an audit perspective, show that you spend any of it.
Right.
So do you not get any more? What happens at this point if you haven't had any work to do, so you've got that 50%, then you don't get your second 50%, right?
No, it wasn't. It was never contemplated.
At the time, we thought the funds would just carry out this the next year, so the court could then get allocated those dollars in the year in which the work was going to happen.
Right.
But that's no longer the case. The dollars reverse, they're not allocated this fiscal year.
Exactly.
Well, we thought they could carry over.
But they can't here.
And
right.
In terms of the reallocation, if we're basing it on DOJ and nothing's been processed, then theoretically nothing else would be distributed.
Right.
And it also assumes numbers are right.
Well, and it also assumes that the Judicial Council's Criminal Justice Services Office is going to be tracking actual cases received, and that's going to be the basis under which the second 50% allocation, according to this recommendation, I wasn't on the group, but I think there are a number of flaws kind of in the logic, but not to say that the working group wasn't thinking hard about this, but I think we're in kind of a different environment now.
The information's changed.
Yeah, the information's changed. We don't know if DOJ's information is accurate. We don't know what the practices are going to be with DAs across the state. Some of them are jumping on it. Some of them are going to wait till the last possible second. So the idea of giving 50% of the money now, and then I'm not sure what the triggering mechanism would be that would make sense for the second 50% of the money.
There isn't one.
The reform of the criminal justice services.
I understand that, but if you have a DA that's waiting until the end of the year, your report would be, I've received no,
So therefore, you don't get your second. So I think we need to distribute the money now.
100% now, and let the courts manage.
Okay, we don't have a motion yet. David, you had your hand up in the
next
margin.
And part of the thing is what we're hearing is some courts are going to get worked right now so they can use some of the resources. And obviously the 50% formula was in consideration of 1% gap. It's no longer a factor. Keep in mind, if you get slammed at the end of the year, you need to spend a lot of that money next fiscal year. You can put that money in the funds held on behalf of category, so it doesn't hit against your 3% cap as well.
So let's clarify that, but that addresses my client's concern. So
in part, because what if you're under your 3%?
Then you don't have a problem. If you're under your 3%, you don't have a problem because you can.
Yeah, I
see what you're saying.
It's just a tap dance.
If you pump all the money in and you don't spend it, you're right. That goes into your 3% bank account. But you can, and this would be interesting from an FPS perspective, but even in your 3% bank account, the only time it triggers an FPS request is if you're going to get above 3%. So I understand what you're saying, but I don't think it'd be a problem, Sherry.
So I have a question and then possibly a motion. But let me ask the question first. To the staff. Judicial Council staff, when the money over the 1% or soon to be the 3% goes back to the Counselor Trust Fund, right? So those courts that we already are going to recommend to the Council that anything over the 1%, where does that money go?
The Counselor
Trust Fund.
For those courts.
So the problem that we had with the prior motion was the allocation. If it goes to a court like I use Mike, and he spends zero, and he doesn't spend it, so he's got 3.5% or 4%, and so that money is now triggered and goes back to the trial court trust fund. Why couldn't there be a process where those courts that can demonstrate they didn't spend it apply for that money because now it's in your pot? It didn't revert back because you allocated it to the court, but it is going back to the branch under the 3% rule. So now it's with you. Why couldn't they do that? So another, you know, so I'm just throwing that out if that is a possibility, because I feel you're paying for those of you whose DAs are not doing anything. But for those of us who are, my motion is get the money out now, because there's a lot of us that could use it. And I would even encourage you, the reports that we've seen are accurate because they've given them to the DAs already. And there is no reason you can't start meeting with your DA now and saying, what are you doing? Because it's going to be a lot of work. So anyway, that's...
Sure, just simplify, would your motion be, looking at the recommendation on page 20, just to adopt recommendation 1?
Let me look. Recommendation 1. Yes, that is my motion. But I do, yes, my motion is 1. But I do ask you, if anything over the 3% goes back from a court that doesn't spend it, could we, for these funds, create a process where they could demonstrate that if Mike got $100 and he didn't spend that $100, because you're going to see it's one-time money that went there, could they ask for it back rather than just put it in the pot that's allocated to all of it? Because that would do it.
So I thought there was a suggestion that we could put it aside and allocate it.
We can't do that.
That's what I heard David say. That's going to be my question.
I don't know if you could use the funds on the hospital, but I don't know what criteria it's for.
It's monies that a trial court received, right, for specific.
For projects.
Yeah, I don't know if this
it's like a special fund
that we have that request. Right. Yeah, yeah.
Trying to encumber it, basically.
Right. It basically encumbers for that specific process. That can't be done.
Well, that's an interesting, I mean, I understand the theory, but for FPS, just so you know, the requests that come into the fiscal planning subcommittee are almost related to their information systems, and we all know this, and they're very, very precise and provide to the FPS by the dollar, here's what we originally allocated for our case management system, $1 million, and because of problems with name the vendor, we haven't been able to implement the system, and at the end of the year, therefore, we're asking that these funds be held on behalf of our court, Brother Trial Court Trust Fund, so they can be further used for those exact dollars for our case management system. I do agree that to be able to then define very specifically and say, I guess you'd say this is what DOJ says our cases are. This is what our allocation was based upon. Therefore, we believe DOJ's numbers are valid, and we believe these cases are still coming. And for those cases that DOJ told us to expect, we're asking that the Trial Court Trust Fund hold on our behalf those additional funds.
Right. And the limitation that we have right now, that if we only receive 50% in January and we don't need the other money and the Trial Court Trust Fund held on to it, what I just heard Glocko say is the state gets that money back
right.
because
right.
it's in the TCTF. If it comes to us,
right.
and then we, each right. court, has an earmark in the TCTF through the funds held on behalf of mechanism, then it's somewhat protected, and it's going to be used specifically for this purpose.
Well, I do what the SPF says. I'm going to hire some staff next year to process this work. It might get it technology, but if you want to keep it held on behalf because you want to hire temps to process, I don't think that would be approved. I just want to be clear.
Well, so Rebecca, and then I've got a thought on that, but Rebecca.
What Judge Conklin just said is we have a vendor that didn't finish the work and we need to finish this implementation project. We have a DA we cannot control and we need to finish this project that's mandated by the state. How I accomplish that, whether I hire staff, or whether I stay 24/7 for the next 9 months.
My overtime.
I think it's the exact same scenario. It's an uncontrollable variable and a mandate that we need to do. And I would propose that FPS even take it up today and decide.
But also remember, the follow up from FPS is this, and from a transparency and a credibility aspect, if So now you say to FPS, we want it to continue to be held in the trial court trust fund so we can continue that work.
Right.
If you don't finish that work, you don't get the money back. So
right.
It all works.
Right.
So
but
all
it's
you're
all
doing.
Right.
So
we don't lose the money.
To Gary Zbacko's concern, it all goes out to all your accounts. You then say at the end of the year, for a variety of reasons, these cases, the 1,000 cases that we believed were coming to us, didn't come to us. We only got 100. We want to hold over the funds for those 900 cases. And for FPS, it's an annual request. We want it to be held in the trial court trust fund for another year so we can get those 900 cases done. At the end of that year, if those 900 cases have evaporated, then you say, guess what? You didn't keep the money. We didn't need it.
Yeah.
I think but you don't get it back to spend for other purposes. From a transparency perspective. So first, Mike Brody, and then Mike Plain.
If I understand how the process is underway, DOJ has already given information to the DAs about the number of cases they're going to have to deal with. I'm going to pick up the phone and call my DA and say, okay, you got 30,000 cases. When am I going to get them?
Yeah.
Right. But at least I know there's 30, whether I get zero today or zero by July 1, I know I'm looking at 30,000 cases that I'm going to have to process it. That information, I think, could form the basis of a reasonable request to hold the funds, you know, for a specific purpose or whatever. If I had a 3% problem.
All right, what if I don't have a 3% problem?
Just put it under your 3%.
But here's the thing. You know, maybe you've got a mega-sized budget, but our 3% is roughly going to be $1.6 million. $130,000 I'd have to park in that 3% for work that's not going to be until the following year. Is a hit. So.
No, what we're saying, Mike, is you just say how long we have left.
It sits on the natural, and it sits on the natural.
Right.
I mean, if in fact all your other amounts that would be sitting
right.
In
but hold on, you can't have funds held on behalf of unless you're in excess of your 3%.
Right.
So you can't, if within your 3%.
Well, then who cares?
Right. Well, that's the other side of it.
If it's
this,
it's not a harm.
If it's
over,
you're
not.
Are you
concerned about local politics type of issue?
No, I'm just, we put the call on the DA, and so we don't know.
Right.
You know, we'll get back to that 8 million other fires put out.
But there's no harm, no call thing, because if you're under the 3%, who cares? And if you're over the 3%, use the tell on behalf of
them. And theoretically, this is now getting a little bit out there, and almost, I don't know if this would ever happen, but so now you're in your second year, you're under your 3%, and now the DA starts slamming you. If you could still ask at the end of that year, that now if you go over your 3%, you can say, we still got more work to do, we want those funds held on behalf, because now you've reached your 3% cap. So I'm trying to conceive of a time when you would ever be harmed by keeping that money in your account when you're under 3%.
So the only more recent analogy, I think it was the Prop 47,
exactly.
Where you got paid when you submitted a report. In other words, you said how many cases you processed, and then you got an allocation based on that. So it's kind of after the fact, if I remember that right. Is that Prop 47?
Oh, yeah.
Which is those updated data that I thought you were getting.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I don't.
It was on to do a look back if we're going to have this one. What I hear talking about is going to a full disposition now with the recognition of the increased 3% gap in utility to the important number.
Right.
You want to do it in light of the DA's deadline, do a true up after their deadline date relative to each county to look at what effect there's going to be for the following year's analysis, so that ultimately, if the fund can't be expended by the court, but based upon what I heard about audit and accounting, that it doesn't just revert back if other courts might need it.
Well, the question would be, if you give all the courts their 100% up front, then what do? Ask them to give it back? If it goes out into their bank account,
it's done.
Once it's there. Now, I don't disagree. Though it might create more work for staff to at least come back with an informational item to either FPS or this committee, simply saying, what's our current status?
Don't create reports that are required.
The staff is saying thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, for all of it.
Kevin?
Yeah,
know that his client
will okay.
And prefer the 100% allocation.
Right.
I would like to second Sherry's motion.
So, to clarification.
Thank you, Brian.
And but we're still in discussion. So now the motion is the recommendation on page 20 of 45 of your material is Sherry's move to adopt recommendation one, which has been seconded, and that is a proportional allocation methodology based on percentage of potentially eligible cases by county as set forth on the table at page 21. The only thing that's going to change is, well, that's it. So you're going to get all your money up front. You're not going to have to worry about a June revise or reallocation. Block, go ahead.
I just wanted to make it clear, though, that if at the end of all of this happening that you did not spend all of your money, it just doesn't go back.
When you say at the end of this
happening. Right, I'm saying at this point, because I think that if you need to carry over and it's taking you a little bit longer, you're going in, it won't be at the end of this year or it'll be the end of next year, that you've tracked it in knowing what you've spent. So that we can return the answer.
So that was a discussion I think you had stepped out, is the theory is this is a two-year allocation, mm-hmm. first year, second year. At the end of the first year, you have not spent it all, but you go to the fiscal planning subcommittee and you ask them to protect those funds in the GCTF. I need another year to get my work done. At the end of that second year, you then say, guess what? Our work's done. We didn't use all the money. Then what you're saying is it works exactly the way it should. It all reverts back if you don't spend it.
And we would return that to the general.
Whichever, right.
If I could just jump in on that one point, bundling it for this specific purpose makes it very easy to return the funds. If you commingle it with part of your 3% and part of your funds held on behalf of, this is for a very specific program, irrespective of where you are on your cap, right, whether you're at 3% precisely, or $100,000 below that, this dollar amount is specifically for that purpose. If Orange doesn't spend that money, you can have it. Go back. Go back to the state general. That's what makes it very clean and
right.
Auditable.
Yep.
To commingle it with part of the general fund and this,
okay.
It's very complicated.
Okay, but that's not part of that. I mean, that's just a recommendation as to how courts manage the money.
Correct.
That's not part of this motion. Okay.
On that, my concern was what's the litmus for this spend? Because, as Mike said, basically $77 a case is, I think, what it comes out at. If you look at that, it's going to cost more than that. You recognize that?
Oh, yeah.
So, if you don't meet the numbers,
yeah.
Let's say you only get a third of the numbers that are on this, or half the numbers, or even if they're more.
Right.
But you can't take a case.
Fair enough. It was just an estimate, and we were very pleased that the Department of Finance recognized our estimate.
You're right, Judge. The true cost.
Yes, that's what I'm trying to get at. You may.
I'm not right by saying.
Yeah, you're fine.
Yeah, this is going to cost a lot more than
that. If someone walks in and says, Judge Thompson, show us how you spent the money, and even though you got half the number of cases, it cost you in your court process the amount and plus,
sure.
Well, then you've demonstrated that.
Right. Yeah, I think you might just take and figure out, kind of like figuring out the copy.
But that shows
like,
the integrity and the auditability,
and
the accountability.
But this cost, like Sherry said, in advance, in anticipation of it coming, that I think are appropriately charged to these funds.
So the lesson is at the beginning of the day, just keep good records. Because that's not part of this issue. This issue is you've got the money. Now, at the end of the day, if somebody comes to you and says, how'd you spend the money? Maybe it costs a lot more per case, but just be prepared to show how you spent the money.
I think sometimes we worry a lot more about that, and I would not keep making expectations or requirements for the grants that have not been imposed on us. I mean, we have a tendency to do that. I think what we should do is thank the legislature for their understanding of the workload and do a good job. Because at the end of the day, if we've met what their priority is, that's what we're going to be measured against. So let's not create all of these requirements that we're not being asked to do.
But
we do have to do ourselves.
But in a way because of the diversion,
you don't live
how
in
do
the
you
world.
Account for that?
Yeah, you don't live in the world.
I live in a world where I have to go to the White Building and explain to them.
And say, we
where
did a great job.
And did you spend it all per the budget limit?
Yeah, okay, well, anyway. So I support my motion. Let's take a vote.
Okay, but Judge Cope?
I'm sorry, I don't want to prolong it either, but I worry about this because I agree with Sherry, but then at the end of this, if somebody's going to come back and say, yeah, now we're going to audit you, and you've got to justify this, and we allocated $77 a case, even though it costs $150 a case, and we're only going to benefit you at $77 a case. If I'm not on the CEO side, I'm on the judicial side, but I would worry about it if I were on the CEO side, given the language I'm hearing here.
I think that's appropriate, Judge. Whenever the legislature appropriates funds for a very specific purpose, that's with intention. And to lump it as a, well, we'll just treat it as discretionary funding and not track, would not be considered prudent fiscal management.
So hypothetically, John, if this had come to us now as non-discretionary funds,
yeah,
how would the trial court then be expected to say that's how we spent the money? So non-discretionary, you have to spend this money for this project. At the end of the day, how would the trial court show they did that?
I think that through proper accounting,
right,
you would see these dollars being spent for this project.
And at the end of the day, we would do the same thing here, though, right?
Exactly.
Right. So I think I agree with Sherry's concern, but I agree with Blocko's as well. Is let's not create more work that we need to do, but on the other hand, let's be prepared to be transparent, because if the legislature does come to us and say, and please, I'm just using this as an example, how is it that you were managed to do all these improvements or do whatever, spend all this money, yet you didn't get your marijuana cases done? Can you explain that to us?
Yeah, that's an issue.
Right. That's an issue.
You didn't meet our exactly.
Right. So we can do that. Sorry. Mike Ryan, Mike Planet.
So then give that direction or that guidance to the trial courts. But back to the motion, how are we going to allocate the funds?
Yeah, let's get the motion.
The motion is, if this concern is about maintaining accurate records in case there's an audit, provide that guidance when the distribution goes out to the trial courts. Let's get done with it.
Right. Yep. So it is, the motion is, Mike Planet, do you want to make a comment?
It's got nothing to do with the motion.
Right, and so the motion is the motion has been moved and seconded that a proportional allocation methodology based on the percentage of potentially eligible cases, which, by the way, is already defined in the table on attachment 4A. So it has the column saying total eligible conviction. So there's the data point that you have to take back to somebody.
Plus, I say I'm going to call my DA and say, where are my 28,446 cases if I've got nothing on July 20th? Or whatever.
Right now. Okay. Moved and seconded. Any further questions or discussions on the motion, which is for recommendation one only, is set forth on page 12. Hearing no additional discussion, is there any opposition either to those on the phone or those in the room, or any abstentions for the motion? Hearing none, the motion passes unanimously, the recommendation on page. So, here's the recommendation two, that has not been moved, it's not been voted upon, so recommendation two, there's no action taken on it. On page 20. Okay. So that gets us through item four. We have...
Advisory Committee approved a single core executive summary to provide a one EZ3 reference document that displays current and prior year funding, includes a statewide perspective, and highlights other relevant areas of focus. Budget Services is ready to populate and distribute the summary to all trial courts based on 2019-20 allocations, and ask that you approve the updated draft on page 23 of your material. Jessica?
I'd like to make that recommendation be adopted. I think it looks great.
Second.
Moved and seconded that the recommendation to approve the attachment 5A be approved. David, did you have a question?
I just had one question. There are different variations of a one-page summary, and is this document that we're talking about what goes to the legislature when we're giving our dog and pony show sort of thing?
This is just for trial court.
Oh, okay.
Yep. This isn't like the budget snapshot.
Okay, so I'm Sherry.
Well, I'm sorry, but I thought we had a big discussion about not including dependency council funding on the spreadsheet, Rebecca. I think that was, you had a concern in your county and there were other counties, since it's not money that comes to the court. I thought we agreed that we were not going to show money on the summary that did not benefit the court, and I still have that concern, because while it goes to the attorneys that support the court's work, it is not court money.
What do you think about self-help? That's something that we have there previously. We can
talk sure. I like self-help better, but I would just not include any money that doesn't come directly to the court.
Okay, so you're just right, to be technical, the recommendation is to approve the update set forth on page 23, and what we do is we change out the box in the lower right-hand corner,
yep.
This court-appointed dependency council, yep. And substitute for that self-help.
Yep, love okay. It.
The quote was love it. Is, well, was it already moved and seconded?
Yeah.
Judge Cope moved and who seconded?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd forgotten the conversation. Yeah, that's
Judge Margin and seconded. Moved and seconded that the summary on page 5A with the noted change be adopted. Any opposition? Any further discussion? Any opposition to those in the room or those on the phone? Hearing none. I'm sorry, I moved past there. But we didn't hear any. The attachment 5A as with the minor change is approved. Thank you. All right. So now we have just left informational items. We've already taken one of those, but let's go to informational item number one with Vlatko still in the room, and that is a Budget Act update.
Yes, thank you, Justin. Hopefully you were all able to join the phone call on June 28th when we went over the budget and the memo was distributed. I don't necessarily want to go over that in detail unless there's folks who think that there's things that are missing in terms of the overall budget picture. Council took action to allocate much of the monies that were in the budget. We know we have the $75 million coming up at the August 9th hearing or meeting of the council. Cannabis issue has been brought forward. As far as sort of overall budget picture, the state ended the fiscal year 18-19 at $1 billion more than was anticipated, even in the May revision. There are some signs of sort of slowing in the housing market. So there's some uncertainty there, but the incomes are still strong and still growing. So there's some mixed issues, but, you know, we're always thinking about what's ahead of us in terms of the budget horizon. But as far as with positive estimates and above, the estimates are good for budget building as they head into the fall. You know, the council also approved the budget change proposals last week, you know, reflecting the items that were put forward by TIC-BAC to JBDC. Some were combined, but there was important issues going forward to them. To the Department of Finance, I think the date now is September 3rd. Now that the instructions have come out for those BCPs to be submitted. So we're working through with all the work of the various staff and the committees, and Kim has been helpful in writing a structural BCP with us. So I think we're just heading into it, you know, another good period of work for the staff, and it doesn't seem like there's ever an end. As you all know, budgeting is a three-year process, and so we look forward to the good work and the support of the PJs and CEOs as we go through the fall and into the spring.
Just for context, I think the amount of requests going forward is about $820 million just above to finance. I expect we will get a reaction and a pretty significant portion of that, about $540 million, is tied
advise finance over the summer to come have a chat with us, and we will be reaching out to the courts for specific targeted conversations in defense of our proposal.
And they unfortunately have another staff person, a new staff person. It gives us always an opportunity to re-educate them on the items, so there's a, you know, always an opportunity. And so they'll see some blue faces and some old faces. One of the managers there has spent time in school with Leah. And so there's some familiarity there, and that's it's good to have that icebreaker in there. So we're going to have a good summer session with them this year and really set the stage for the good conversations in the fall.
Sherry, did I see your hand up or not?
Nope.
Okay. So, Mike Clement?
Yeah, I just want to express my appreciation for the work on the 3% cap. It's a big deal. Much appreciated, much needed. Take a little bit of credit.
Chief and Martin, as you know, really pushed hard on our priorities in the spring. As they came out of the governor's budget, even though they had a lot of good, you know, solid, you know, funding for the courts, the judgeships and the funding there, that ended up being allocated by the council across for equity, and the 3% really shows the hard work that the chief and Martin and everybody's support.
So I want to be real careful because I don't mean to speak for the chief, but I don't think it should be lost that the comment was made that the chief and Martin also looked the other way and acknowledged the work specifically of this committee and of budget services staff. Because the July meeting, as was explained many times, is viewed as very routine. But the July meeting, from the perspective of TICVAC, is the culmination of our work. But that's when all of the recommendations we made, the actual allocations were approved, and it was clearly acknowledged in the room from the chair, the chief, that the work that's done in this room and done from the folks that support us is, without that, it would not have been accomplished. So I did want to echo and let everybody know of your work. Sometimes we come and go, it's fast meetings, we say hi, we say bye, and the message should not be lost that the work you do is very much appreciated by those who ultimately approve it. So, all right, Zlatko, thanks very much. We already took information item 2, so now we're moving to information item 3. And I panicked because I looked over and didn't see Cottrell, but he moved like the wind, and here he is on my right.
Talking about something we've kind of touched upon earlier in the meeting, and that's fun help on behalf of Cottrell.
Right, I'll keep it brief. We've already discussed a lot of it. But under the Judicial Council adopted process, upon completion of the project or planned expenditures, courts are required to report to TICVAC within 90 days on the project or planned expenditures of how those funds were expended. To assist courts with this reporting requirement, budget services staff developed a reporting template. You can see that toward the latter half of the material. That template was submitted to the courts and requested a status of those projects and planned expenditures from the courts that identified completion through fiscal year 17-18. Going forward, budget services will continue to survey courts on projects or planned expenditure status, and we'll report back to TICVAC on a quarterly basis.
Mike Roddy, I guess my question would be, so far it appears that this process is working as intended.
Yes.
And that's a good thing.
Yes.
Okay.
So let me echo that, because I chaired that, the fiscal planning subcommittee, and it actually, you stated it very appropriately. It is actually working as intended. I'm just holding up everybody in the room. Our meeting this afternoon, this is about an inch and a half of material. These reports are detailed. They come to the members of the subcommittee. They're reviewed. Cottrell does an excellent job summarizing them for us. But everybody is submitting the appropriate documentation they need to support their request for the funds being held. And so, yes.
But most importantly, they're following through, and we're able to basically close the books and move on to the next step.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, so, Cottrell, thanks so much. Any questions for Cottrell? So we're about to adjourn the meeting, but let me take care of a little bit of just logistics. For that, the Fiscal Planning Subcommittee has a telephonic call at 2 o'clock in the room right now, and we can't change that because it's a posted meeting. So, Judge Gabe, are you still on the line, and Judge Jackson?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so 2 o'clock, this is going to be a telephonic meeting. We'll be on the road. For those of us that are able to call in, please do so. But we're not going to stay in the room for 2 hours and 15 minutes to take care of this. We'll all be on. But I would, since we're all together right now, my proposal to Cottrell
is we consider next time having our meeting at 9:30 in the morning before the 10 o'clock TICFAC meeting to address the logistical issue.
Second the motion.
Second. All right, any further discussion for the good of the order? Thank you all. When's our next?
Just wait a minute. This is Judge Jackson. Call back in on this number and use the same passcode. You know?
Judge Jackson, it's on the posted, but I just want to make
sure. Yes, it is, Judge.
Okay.
Yes, that's correct.
All right.
General discussion for the good of the order before we adjourn so everybody can get back to their busy days? Hearing none, thank you very much for adjourning.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
The host has left the meeting. So at this time, the meeting will come to an end. Thank you, and goodbye.